Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got to.
Yes, we are going to do it right because we can't do it any other way, you all. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and I am live on Black Radio Hall of Fame at Harrisstow State University. All the opinions expressed today are those of me and my guest, and not necessarily those of Black Radio Hall of Fame or Harris State Stowe College University, that is. So, and you all know that I have plenty of opinions. So we are going to be expressing those, but we got some information today. And before we start with the introduction of our guest, I do want to say get your pen and pencils out because we got some assignments for you, and you are probably going to hear some information from our guest that you want to follow up on. So before we start, I want to say that our good friend, she's a friend of many, a supporter of a lot of things going on in our community. Martha Jane West was hospitalized last week with a heart attack, so she is recuperating. We thought she was about to get out, and then they noted after one of those exit kinds of things that she had COVID. Now, most of you all who have seen Martha Jane out and about, she has always, without fail, had her mask on. And to think that she goes in the hospital and then that's where she contracts COVID-19. So we want to send her healing vibes and make sure she's safe and getting on the right track with her help. I do believe I might have this wrong, but I think Martha Jane West is 92, 93. She's in her 90s, so she's had quite a life, and we need to get her on this show soon. But yeah, so let's send some healing vibes out to Martha Jane West. So we have with us today in the studio Thomas Mines, and Thomas, you know, he wants to be noted as an insurance agent, but I'm going to tell you he is much, 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 much more than that. I used to think that I got special treatment from Tommy because I've known him for so long, and he, I can say this publicly, if it wasn't for him, I would not have two extra nickels to rub together. And so now I do, and I have that pot of money I have dedicated to the Youth Council for Positive Development, which is my favorite charity, so that when I'm gone, they get some little chunk of change. So, but he knows me. He knows my schedule, so he's always been attentive to that. And again, I thought that was just me, but he does all his clients like that. So that's good to know. I thought I was being a special person, but it's good to know that there are people in the world like a Thomas Mines. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Well, thank you very much. Abarigani, Jamala.
And Jama. And Jama.
You are very special. Very special indeed.
But I'm saying that because I know that people have entrusted you with their portfolios, as meager as they might be, to take care of their last will and testament. So I don't think all, you know, agents, insurance agents get to that kind of confidence it bestowed upon them. So I know that it's based on a lot of trust over the years of doing things in this community, not just for clients, but also in our community. So I really want to publicly thank you for that, Tommy.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So you started off as a teller at our first and only Black Bank in St. Louis, Missouri. And it's interesting that you got the job because you went there asking for a loan.
Exactly. A loan to go to school.
So, and I want people to know this because I think the kind of persona that Tommy has spoke to ever who saw him on the other side of that desk asking for a loan, that this is somebody that we need in this bank. So you went from asking for a loan to become a teller and then actually becoming a loan officer. Talk
correct.
A little bit about that journey.
Okay, that's very interesting. I actually had, when I graduated from high school, from Sumner High School, I went immediately into the service. And after 3 years, came back home to St. Louis and wanted to go to college. And I, in turn, found out about Gateway National Bank, went there, applied for a loan, and the gentleman who was the loan officer said, you know, you would be a good fit for this bank in terms of actually working here. And I said, okay. And so I took the test and passed it, and they gave me the job. So I said, what about the loan? He said, oh, yeah, you can get the loan. I said, because now you're an employee. And so it started from there. And as you said, Jamal, I started as a teller, and I went on to become a loan officer. And that was a very good career for me. It really kind of got me involved in the financial field. And from there, I went into insurance business. Matter of fact, I started in the insurance business in 1975. And unlike most insurance agents at my young age, I'm not retired. I love what I do. I love my people. And so I continue to stay in the financial services area and do what I can in terms of the effort to keep people in place.
So I think one of the things that make you unique to this profession is that people were able to get a glimpse of how you can operate when you had a certain amount of autonomy at the first Black Bank. And I want to keep saying that because we don't have it. And sometimes people don't understand what the difference is between having a Black Bank or a Black financial institution where people truly do understand the realities of the folks who are coming into their bank. And so I remember the case, and I'm saying remember because he started out at the bank in 1968, but I'm pretty sure shortly after that is when I met Tommy. So here is a person who was relatively new to the industry, but I think the creativity and ingenuity plus the kind of compassion that you have for Black people, you created a loan that was based on people's actual seasonal professions. Talk about that, because I don't know that I can say that exists anymore. Most times right. These loan officers look at your stuff, yay or nay, you don't have this, you don't have that, and then you got redlining thrown in there. So you did something I think was very unique, and you can tell me if somebody else picked that up.
To my knowledge, it probably has not been picked up, but essentially when you borrow money from a bank, you have what is called an installment loan. Most people are familiar with that. And so you make regular payments every month. But after attending money and banking at Washington University, I came upon the idea that if you have a demand loan, which is basically a loan that says you will pay a certain amount at a certain time, that you can actually structure that loan based on your revenue. And so one of the first businesses that I did that with was a cleaners. And I realized during the fall and winter was their high revenue period. And so at that time, I had the owner to pay the principal and interest. And then during the spring and summer, when the revenue was low, I just had him to pay the interest. And so it took some of the burden of trying to meet that note every month. And so that particular type of loan, I'm not sure they offer today, but it's applicable to anyone who's in a business or even for that matter has a low and high income period to use that as a way of keeping up with their payments.
So I say that because I think sometimes the loan officers look at ways to not give you a loan instead of looking at ways, how can we help you get this loan? And so I just think that kind of creativity went a long way, and I would love to see if that's operative now. But I know that when I hear and read about loans to people in the Black community in particular, it's not a very good track record. And again, it's because it's all of these reasons why we can't get a loan instead of how we can get one. Because sometimes we can pay the loans back, but we just don't have all the equity and all the boxes to check that a bank is looking for.
Exactly.
So I really appreciate that. So you went on to do your own business, and I think one of the things I often hear from you is, you know, the passion around financial literacy, which you and I agree that it should probably start while folks are in kindergarten.
True.
And I think for Black people in particular, because the wealth gap is so huge between us and white people, and some of that is, you know, the system has helped create that kind of inequity and wealth gap. But there are still some things that we can do and that we don't know that we can do that can help generate wealth for our families, for our communities. And wealth is different from income. And I know at a certain point we're going to talk about, like, wills and establishing that kind of legacy, but I think it's just difficult to talk about leaving a will or making sure you have a will when you haven't done the work before then to even have something of value to leave behind. So let's talk a little bit about why is it that we have that kind of wealth gap that after 12 generations of giving free labor or undervalued labor in this country, you know, we still are at a point where we don't have comparable pay, comparable wealth to those folks who, you know, who have been here sometimes less long, less the length that we have. But what are some things that we need to be mindful of as a people that would help us understand our own literacy and our own ability to navigate toward, you know, through this system that sometimes can be really complicated?
Well, that's a very good question, but also a very good commentary. Let me say this to you. I did not understand money, even though I worked in the banking business, until I went into the insurance business. That's where I found out that the insurance companies basically had their finger on the pulse of what money is all about. Let me give an example. When I first started in the insurance business, I used to talk with husbands and fathers about life insurance. And the question that they would always raise was, what's going to happen when I die and my wife decides to marry someone else? But I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at two or three children. I'm saying, you know, most importantly, you need to make sure that you have provisions for your family. There's a term that's thrown around quite a bit today. It's called generational wealth. One of the first things you should do in terms of an asset, if you can, is to purchase a life insurance policy. And it could be term insurance, because what it does, it creates an estate. And if you, in turn, have a premature death, now you have something to leave to your family. Now, what's going to happen with the money that you leave? Well, the next step, and I'm kind of moving ahead here a little bit, is a trust, a revocable living trust, which says exactly how the money is to be dealt with. Now, Jamal, you mentioned the word will. Let me tell you about a will. A will is a document that only comes into play when you die. But a will also has to be probated. And one of the worst things you want to do is have your assets go to probate courts. So I'm going to repeat what I just said. If you have a will and you have assets in the will has to be probated. The trust, on the other hand, does not have to be probated and can actually take in force upon the death or the incapacitation of the individual. Once again, generational wealth. So if you are not able to purchase a home, at least start thinking in terms of how you're going to accumulate those assets to get to that point. When you have that first job and you have an opportunity to have some income, you should start your retirement plan even on your first job. And that retirement plan should be something similar to a Roth, R-O-T-H IRA. That's using after-tax dollars to accumulate on a tax-deferred basis and then receive that money tax-free by the time you reach age 59 and a half. I have talked to so many people that say, I'm going to retire at 55, and I ask them, how much have you put away for that? So I'm working on it. It's not going to work that way. There's some basic
soon come.
Exactly. Oh, I'm waiting for my ship to come in. I always ask them, well, did you send one out to sea? Okay. So let's start from the basics, and that is, number one, let's create the estate. The easiest way and the less expensive way to do that is a life insurance policy. And if you have a spouse or you have children, it should be at least a term policy, okay? We'll talk about the other types of policies as we go into this. Then if you're fortunate enough to have a home, purchase a home, that's your other asset. Now, generational wealth means that you're going to pass on that legacy to members in your family, and that's really what it's all about.
I'm thinking, though, that some of the mindset is that wills, estate planning, all of that is for wealthy people. Mm-hmm. I don't have enough money. I mean, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. And I think part of what I always hear from folks like you, Tommy, is, you know, when you put away something from the very beginning, you're not going to necessarily miss it, you know, because it's going straight into an account that's going to help generate some of those assets and the wealth. But I think it's just very difficult for our people to think about 1 year from now, 10 years from now, when, you know, they got bills flying in front of their faces. But, you know, I saw some kind of pyramid, and not a scheme, mm-hmm. but how, by putting away a certain amount of money over a certain amount of time, would get you this much money at the end. And people, like, always love that little diagram. Mm-hmm. But if they don't start, like you said, you didn't send that ship out to sea. If you don't start it, it's not going to be anything in that pot by the time you get old.
Exactly.
And I, you know, it also talks about the, you know, we have this adage about, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Well, I think the same thing applies to our wealth. If I had known I was going to live this long, I would have, you know, invested, or, you know, not have some of the spending habits I had. But, you know, I think it's still a lot of this mythology that grips us, and we just can't see how to plan for next week.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I really learned about estate planning was from a gentleman named Robert Boardman. Robert Boardman was an attorney that specialized in nothing but estate planning. And what I learned was this: if you have assets that wind up in probate court, your plan didn't work. So therefore, I spent my last 15 years working in the area of estate planning with an attorney that I provide information to pull that information together for people so they can make that happen. But the other part of that is this: you have to be able to think in terms of the future. So let me give an example. In the financial area, there's a rule of 72. The rule of 72 means this: if you have a certain amount of interest that's paid on your money, the rule of 72 will tell you how long it takes for your money to double.
Mm.
So currently, let's say you've got 10% that you're earning on your money, and it's possible to earn that in a mutual fund, for instance. If you take the 10 and you divide it into the 72, it's 7.2. That means 7.2 years your money will double. Now, time is very important. One of the greatest inventions in the world is compound interest. So go back to what I talked about before. If you start that job and you start putting a little bit of money aside and you get a reasonable rate of return, reasonable being 6 or 7%, that's not a lot of risk. And you're putting money in on a regular basis through payroll deduction, before you know it, you will accumulate enough money that you will be able to retire at age 55. The key word is accumulation and compound interest. You can't beat it. One of the problems I notice in our community is this: by the time we, with all due respect, buy the different cars that we want, all the shoes that we want, all the jewelry that we want, and when we put money aside, if we can, for our children to go to school, now you're about 45 or 50. Then you're starting to get serious about it. You lost 20 or 25 years. Compound interest works when you have time. So you need to make sure that in addition to all the other responsibilities that you have, you start putting some money aside. And the best way to do that is payroll deduction. Regardless of whether it's a 401k or 457, payroll deduction is the key, because once you put it in there, you forget about it. Before you know it, you're where you're supposed to be.
Well, now we're talking about payroll deduction. That requires that you have a banking account. There are many of our people who are unbanked. What's the alternatives or options for them? I just, you know, other than, you know, putting money under the mattress, what are the options that people have who either don't have the kind of job that does payroll to deductions, or they don't even have a bank account?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Having been in banking for many, many years, I'm kind of prejudiced to credit unions. Credit unions to me are owned by the members, and they have ways in which the members can start bank accounts at a very reasonable amount of money. And you can even have a bank account, whether it be checking or saving, that doesn't require a long balance or doesn't require a lot of money to keep the account in force. Commercial banks are not designed for individuals. They're designed for commercial business. So credit unions tend to be the place where people should go to open up accounts where they can have money deducted from their account to go towards their retirement plans and what have you.
I think I definitely agree with that. I started off in St. Louis at the Teachers Credit Union, and of course it morphed into the St. Louis Community Credit Union, where all folks could come. And it is a difference. Some of the organizational accounts I have are with those other financial institutions, and there definitely is a difference. I'm also thinking about when. It, to me, it's different ways that people can start looking at this. Like, you know, maybe 20 years ago, I told nieces, nephews, and whatever, I'm not giving you money for, you know, toys and crap and clothes, because you're going to get that. I want to put in where you are going to see some growth over time. So there were a couple of them that picked up on that, and there was a college fund, and, you know, every year that there was a birthday or some other event, you know, money was put in there, and also then would say, now here's your balance. So they, you know, on the card, they were able to see it growing, and tell me that's not like inspiring. And the day came when they graduated and they got a nice little sum of money. That was no skin off my teeth, because again, I was putting it in where I would have been buying a toy or whatever. But I think for some of the other relatives, it was difficult, whether it was a 529, mm-hmm. or some account that was set up in for the child, that you could say, don't give the child any toys, send it to this, whether, you know, be whatever. It just seems like trying to plan is just difficult. But people got the message with me, you're not going to get anything. You're going to get the money, and it's going straight into an account. And that made a lot of sense. And I know even for my granddaughter, she was able to have a nice pot of money when she went off to college. So I see, and I know, but I also see the difficulty of doing that. But for a credit union, I think they would be willing to work with you to say, here's my situation, what do you suggest? And they will customize something for you.
Right. You know, here's the other issue too, is that the financial services area is basically not built to help people to get ahead. I'm going to repeat that statement. The financial service industry is not built to help people to get ahead. Why would I say that? Because things that used to take place that were very easy and affordable are no longer there. For instance, you may remember that you used to be able to buy U.S. savings bonds. You could buy them through the schools. You could even buy them through the bank. It'd be hard-pressed to find a place where you can buy a U.S. savings bond, except to go to the Federal Reserve Bank, which fortunately we have one here in St. Louis, where you can buy savings bonds, which is still relevant, affordable for most people. Now, you mentioned the 529 plan. That's an excellent plan to get started with a young person, where in addition to maybe buying them a toy, other family members can contribute to the 529 plan on a regular basis. That money accumulates tax deferred, it's invested, and when the person is ready to go to school, there's money there. Now, here's the other caveat. If you keep the plan for 15 years, and the person was fortunate enough to go to school with a scholarship or did not go to school at all, now you can change that 529 plan into a Roth plan for yourself or for the individual. As long as they've been in the plan at least 15 years, you can do that. And it starts from day one, not 15 years later, but day one. Regardless of how much you put in there, it can now be converted to a Roth. These are the kinds of things that are happening today. But the one thing I learned many, many years ago, if you understand corporate law and tax law, you can make it in this country. You have to understand those two. The other problem that we have is we don't have individuals in the insurance and investment field that can work with the average investor. Let me give an example. I started working with a young lady when she first went into the investment field. And I used to refer clients to her that had $50 a month that they could invest. I spoke with her about a week or so ago, and she indicated to me, with all due respect, that now her minimum investable asset for the person has to be $250,000. She thanked me for the referrals, but now if I have another client that wants to start at $50 a month, I got to try to find financial person to do that. Okay, that's very discouraging. I am now, and if anyone is listening, they happen to represent a financial institution where they are a Series 6 and a Series 7. And if you have those series, you know what that means. That means you can buy stocks, you can sell stocks, mutual funds. I'm looking for someone that I can refer business to again for that $50 a month person who needs to get started with their Roth or their traditional IRA, because very difficult to find those persons now.
You know, I'm thinking, going back to the savings bond, I don't even know if people know that those things are steep. I mean, I don't even know if people even heard of them, but I remember particularly for folks who work for the government, they would just have those taken out, like a $25 one or a $100 one every pay period. My mom ended up working for the government, and she was taking those out. My stepfather, who was in the career military, was taking them out, and his father, who worked at the post office, was taking them out. Now, you know, back in the day, I guess that was a thing, because the interest rate was fairly decent. I remember specifically that my stepfather got into a whole thing with his oldest sister, who I think was the beneficiary of them. And so when the father died, she took all the savings bonds. So, but and there was quite a nice little chunk of money. But I'm looking at this interest rate for savings bonds and even for savings at credit union. I mean, this is a complete flip. When I had a high school job and I put my little change from tips, that's how I opened up my account at the credit union. But the interest rate was fairly decent.
Right.
I can't remember what it was now, but now, I mean, it's so daggone low. You know, I just get pissed even talking about that, because we might get 2% on interest rate on a savings account.
That's too high. 2% is too high. It's less than 1%.
So here's the thing. They're using our money to make money, even in a credit union, but yet we only going to get less than 2% interest?
Okay, let's talk about the solution to that. If you have a credit union that has what is called a registered rep, that's a person who can sell mutual funds in particular, and they can sell the mutual funds at a reasonable cost. Let's talk about it being maybe $50 a month. They can invest that money for you at $50 a month, and just based on the regular rate of return, in terms of being a moderate investor, you can pick up 6, 7, or 8% return on that money. You're not going to get that kind of interest rate on a savings account, because that's really an account that's liquid. But an investment into a mutual fund that you can afford will start you on the road of financial success. And that's where you get your rate of return and opportunity to actually have more money later on. But once again, if you have a credit union that does not have a registered rep, then you have to consider perhaps one of the freestanding organizations such as Edward Jones, for instance, where they may have registered reps that can start up a small account for you and start building from there.
So I do want to go back to this whole issue about having somebody in the banking industry or the investment industry that understands small investments. Because that $1 million that you talked about from that other person, that's going to get them some big fat commissions. But that it's not doing anything for the community in terms of trying to create a culture of literacy, of financial literacy, so that people understand. Because I think once somebody in the family does it, usually they can convince other family members to do something. And I know that's the case in our family. You know, everybody's not doing it, but you know, most folks are trying to put something away for the children and college and old age and all of that. And it's been quite successful. So I just look at the industry now, and as you said earlier, it's about their bottom line, not yours. And if you are not making enough for them, they will drop your butt. I know that. So again, I think it's imperative that those folks who are looking for people to help them start off in the right direction, even if it doesn't mean big fat commissions for them, it's really where we need to be. If you're joining us, we are talking financial literacy, but we are about to start talking about how do you really create that estate plan. And you don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to be a gazillionaire, as they say on the TV. You don't have to be a gazillionaire, but you are listening to Voices from the Battlefield, and I just think money is a battlefield because we live under capitalism. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and we are talking to Thomas Mines, who is with Thomas Mines and Associates, who has done this work in our community in a very trustful and respectful way. And so when he talks, I listen, and he has convinced me that, you know, we need to be telling our folks about estate planning. And that does not require, as we said before, that you got to be wealthy and be a gazillionaire. It just requires a certain mindset, Tommy, because I know that when you start talking about money and you start talking about death, our people really start to shut down. True. And some of it, I think is based on, religion, because it's something about people talking about death. They think that that's burning bread on folks, and that they don't even want to talk about that because that means you're going to die. And my response to that is we all going to be leaving up out of here, but how we leave is we have some control over. So for somebody, and I'm just going to say this because there's been a number of deaths in my family over the last few years. Some of those people had planned very well, very well, and they knew chapter and verse what they wanted, how they wanted it, who gets what. And that certainly has inspired me to take another look at how prepared I am for beyond death. So kind of walk us through. We talked a little bit about the legacy and the estate planning that has to start before you looking at tubes up in the bed. Right. But what else do we need to know about upon your death, what's supposed to happen and what you need to have in place?
Okay. Glad you brought that up. Let me talk about before your death. One of the reasons I got involved with estate planning about 15 years ago is because the same story that was told to you was told to me. You have to have a lot of assets in order to have an estate plan. That's not true. Any asset that you have, your home, your bank account, your car, that's an asset. If you are over the age of 18, there are two documents that everyone needs to have. One is a power of attorney for health care, for someone to make decisions for you regarding your health when you're not able to. The other document you need is a power of attorney for finance, someone that can actually handle your financial affairs for you if you become incapacitated. Both of those are two very important documents.
So, Tommy, I'm going to stop you there because okay. I think that's spot on, but I also encourage people to do the healthcare directive. So you might have somebody delegated as a power of attorney, but before then, everybody, including the hospital that may have to take you on an emergency basis, is going to ask, do you have a healthcare directive?
Right.
And you need to say yay or nay, because you can't rely on somebody in another city to say, I told Uncle Sonny, you know, what I wanted at death, and I don't want to be resuscitated. That has to be a legal document that's inside your medical record so that people know.
Well, the good news about a healthcare power of attorney, it includes two components. One is the actual power of attorney for healthcare, people making decisions for you about your health in terms of whether you're going to be hospitalized or taken care of in a nursing home or whatever the case may be. And in that same document is the, in Missouri, we call it physician's directive, which is someone who's terminally ill. And you've already made a decision how you want to have your last days on this earth to be handled. So within that healthcare power of attorney, you have both the healthcare power of attorney, but also the physician's directive. Most people call it the living will.
Okay.
So it covers both of those in that one document.
Okay, I didn't know that. So that's good to know, because I think this what makes it awkward when people are literally dying. Then somebody says, what do you want? I mean, you're not in really a position to be thoughtful about that. And so it's really best to do that when people are in good health, you know, they got a sane state of mind, and they understand future. Because I just know that when you're on your sick bed, or, you know, you've been diagnosed with a terminal disease, that folks don't really want to start talking about, like, what do I want to be resuscitated? Do I want all of that is like seems to be off the table.
Right.
But yeah, so go ahead and talk a little bit more about the.
So I would be remiss if I told you what you needed and then not tell you where you can get it. Okay. So even though I'm an insurance agent, I carry those documents with me. They are fill in the blanks, recognized by the state of Missouri, recognized by all financial institutions, whereby if a person says, I need a healthcare power of attorney, I have the document. I get the information from them over the phone. I send it to them. All they have to do is get two witnesses and notarize. It's legal. Once you get your document notarized, you give a copy to your primary care physician, and then you give a copy to each of the person that you name as your agent to help those with those decisions. The same thing with the power of attorney for finance. Now, it's a glorified bill-paying document, which means that if it's requiring some heavy action in terms of pensions and things like that, it's probably not going to work. But for someone that has a bank account that they're the only person on the account and they need someone to handle the business for them, I have a generic power of attorney finance document. It's a fill in the blank that requires two witnesses and a notary, and it has been accepted at all the financial institutions in St. Louis. Those are free, and I make those available to people. But the key word is over the telephone. I don't really try to make home visits with that because of the fact of the time involved. But if someone called me and tell me they need a healthcare power of attorney or a finance power of attorney, I'll get the information from them over the phone and send it to them in due time, and they can take it from there. And it's free. So this would be a good time for you to give the audience my telephone number.
Okay, go ahead.
314-296-6142. I'm going to repeat that. 314-296-6142. It's a call forwarding service. So when you call, they'll probably answer the phone. Thomas L. Madison Associates, you ask for me, they will forward the call to me. I can get the information with the phone and interview on the phone, get the information that you need, and then have the document prepared and sent to you. That's a courtesy that I give to people. So that's what I want to make sure that you know. Those are the two most important documents that you have, and especially if you're married. If you're married, you need to have a power of attorney for finance because you're not legally able to sign your spouse's name.
You hear that, legally able to sign that name. So we don't want no hanky-panky there. You might get charged with forgery, and that's a whole nother thing. So I know people talk about a will, but they don't talk about a trust. What's the difference between a will? Because people think, I got a will, I'm good, you know, but then when they die, they find out, something's missing here. But then, you know, that's the beginning point, but so many of us don't even get to the will part. I mean, exactly. We even have like entertainers and all of that who don't have a will, didn't have a will at death. I mean, I think about Prince, I think about Aretha Franklin, and now, of course, their folks are fighting over who gets what.
Right.
I think for me, the living will and the trust are ways to decrease the kind of stress that we're going to have, leave for our loved ones who's got to figure all of this stuff out.
Exactly. There's a big difference between a will and a trust. First of all, a will is a document that comes into play when you die. And the first thing that has to be happening with a will is it has to be first presented to the probate court. An attorney has to do that. You can't do that on your own. And then the will basically says that all of your funeral expenses have to be paid, all of your debts have to be paid, and it's public knowledge, which means that it is in a publication in St. Louis City called the St. Louis Daily Record, and in the county it's called the St. Louis Countian. These are legal newspapers that creditors and hospital organizations read every day to see who's died so they can file a claim against the estate. So that's what you have when you have a will. It has to be probated. If you have assets in the will, such as your home or your bank account, the court requires you to have all your debts paid. After the debts have been paid, then what is left is then paid to the heirs. If there are no liquid assets in the estate, but there's real estate, the real estate has to be sold to take care of the creditors and the debts that we're talking about. So to have a will is not necessarily the best thing to handle for your estate planning. However, if you have minor children under the age of 18, you need a will because you have to establish a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
But the living trust is something that most people need to have. It's a legal document that's never probated. It's a legal document that says, in the event that I become incapacitated, I'm going to name what is called a successor trustee to handle my business for me. When you pass away, the trustee also takes care of the distribution of your assets. It is a document that a lot of attorneys do not provide because they don't get a lot of business in that area. And unfortunately, the attorneys that do provide living trusts, such as elder care attorneys, can charge a pretty hefty price. But a living trust is superior to a will because it makes sure that your assets are never probated. And you don't need to have any other attorney provide any services for you when you have a living trust because the trustees can take care of that. And the good news is this. With a living trust, you are the first trustee. And that means you're the beneficiary of your own assets. When you have real estate, instead of having the home in your name, you transfer the home into the trust. So it becomes a revocable living trust of Thomas Mines, for instance. You still own the home, but you're the first trustee. Most of your mortgage companies won't have an issue with that because it's a name change on the deed. It has nothing to do with the loan. But let's go a step further. In my situation, I have a daughter, and in the event of my passing, I want to make sure that my home goes to her. So I put in place what is called a beneficiary deed. That's a legal document. It's like a life insurance policy for property. Upon my passing, my home will pass to my daughter and it avoids probate court. It's less expensive than a living trust, but it still gets the job done.
Hmm. And is that only for a house or is it also for other property? What if somebody had a business?
Well, if you have a business, first of all, let's assume that your business is at least an LLC, limited liability company. You should put that company in the trust because unless you have a partnership, chances are if it's a sole member, the business may perpetuate itself but won't be managed the way you want it. So you can take the business and put it into the trust as well. The whole key about a living trust, Jamal, is this. You can create a trust, but you have to fund the trust. That means you have to move assets from there currently being held in someone's name to the name of the trust. I'll give you a good example. talked to two business people that just had trusts prepared for themselves, and the law firm gave him a beautiful document, a leather-bound invoice with their names and the whole bit. And I asked him one question. I said, is the trust funded? They looked at me with a blank stare. What do you mean? I said, did you move assets from your name into the trust? And no, they didn't. So that meant this. If they passed away, the assets were still outside of the trust, so the assets would be probated. Mm. So they had this beautiful trust document with nothing in it. So the key is fund the trust. Transfer the ownership from your name into the trust. And that's what you do when you have real estate. That's what you do when you have a business. Because that way you will perpetuate the business by telling the people exactly what you want to happen in the trust.
One of the things that you said made me think about when you're trying to create the wealth, and in, I think it was the living trust, where they first deal with all the debts that you have, and then after that, any beneficiaries will get what's left.
That's the will.
That's the will.
Exactly.
And it makes me think about, you know, sometimes how we live, that we are under a quite, you know, crushing debt even. And so, you may end up owing. Mm-hmm. you might like dissolve the whole daggone will with no money left over and then still owe. So, you know, to me, that's just a insert right now to say, let's try to live not above our means but within our means, so that that is helping to create the kind of wealth that we want for our family.
Exactly. And the other point is this. I mentioned earlier that when I first dealing with young families, and I talked to the husband about life insurance, and he had issues with having a large life insurance policy because he was concerned about what his widowed wife would do. By having a living trust, you can make the trust the beneficiary and say exactly what you want to happen to the insurance proceeds, so that the surviving spouse doesn't have it in her mind what she needs to do. It's more or less what you want it to be done for your family. And that was the answer to the question, why you should have enough life insurance to pass on to your family.
Yeah.
Put it in a trust.
Right. Now, my mom has a... she's calling it a living will, but maybe it's a trust. And that is, she has all her assets, including her home, and she's leaving it to her children. Well, I've lost a brother and a sister, and each time, then those folks get taken off the as beneficiaries, and then, you know, you look at the redistribution. Is that the living will, or is that a trust?
That's a living trust.
That's a living
because
trust.
Because it has the assets in it.
Okay, so.
The living will is what we call... what you want to happen or what you do not want to happen in the event that you're terminally ill.
Okay.
That's called the living will. And in Missouri, we call it the physician's directive.
Okay.
Some people call it the healthcare directive.
Okay. And so the other question, I think, for me and maybe for others is this notion of the power of attorney. Because I used to think that that was the person who also was going to be able to make decisions after death, but their role ends at the exactly. at the death. Exactly. And so if you don't have somebody else assigned to the role beyond death, then the person who had power of attorney and they had access to your bank account and they were making decisions, their role ends. And I don't know if people really understand that.
No, they don't. Power of attorney for finance, the person who grants that power is called the grantor or the principal, and the person who carries out the duties for the individual is called the attorney in fact. And as you just stated, upon the death of the grantor, the power of attorney for finance is no longer valid. However, if you have assets that you want to continue to perpetuate, provide benefits for someone else, you should then have a called a revocable living trust. The word revocable means you can make changes to it. So you have both documents. You have the power of attorney that will take care of you while you're alive, and you have the revocable living trust that takes care of you while you're incapacitated or when you pass away.
Yeah, sometimes I've been in the bank where somebody's trying to take their person's name off their account because they have proven not to be trustworthy. And so if they have that revocable one, that allows you to continue to change and make, you know, adjestments to
your... I'll tell you a technique about that one too. So you put on, you know, Junebug on your account, and all of a sudden Junebug's acting up. And you can't get Junebug to come to the bank to take his name off. So you go to the bank, because that's a joint account now, right? So you go to the bank and you just pull all the money out and open up a new account.
Uh-huh.
And then Junebug doesn't really have anything to work with. But you get a power of attorney for finance, and you name that person that you have confidence in. Now, let me say this, too. It doesn't have to be a relative. It can be someone you have confidence in. I didn't use the word trust. It's a person you have confidence in that will take care of business for you when you can't take care of business yourself. So now you got a power of attorney for finance. You got your attorney, in fact, in place, which is a person that you have confidence in. And you have an account with your name only. That's how you take care of business when you have a situation like what we're talking about, but Junebug won't cooperate.
So we're going to eliminate Junebug, because Junebug has proven that he's going to squander whatever's left of your estate. So what I hear you saying, Tommy, is all the different pieces, all the different assets that somebody has needs to be combined into a living trust. So that you don't have, okay, here's a money market account that somebody else is on that one. You got this, the bank savings, somebody's on that one. The house deed is with, I mean, all of this gets to be consolidated in a simple way so that whoever, that one person or two persons that gets named to be the, what was that called? Is that called the executor of the estate?
In Missouri, it's called a personal representative, but that's a will.
Okay, that's a will. See, I'm already confused.
Yeah, trustee is the trust.
Okay, so the trustee then is the person who says, we got this mound of stuff. It's not a huge, big portfolio, but it's all of, you know, Jamala's stuff in here, and I'm going to look at who gets what after all her bills are paid.
Right.
Okay.
So let me give you a caveat. You know, a revocable trust is a beautiful document. It stands the test of time, but it can be expensive. So here's the remedy to the situation. If you have life insurance, make sure your beneficiaries are up to date. You need a primary beneficiary, and you need a contingent beneficiary. Because if the primary predeceases you and you didn't make any changes and you don't have a contingent, then it goes to probate. Also, if you have an automobile, I think the DMV is now asking people, do you want to put a TOD on your title? TOD meaning transfer on death. So that in the event of your passing, the car would not be probated, but would go to the person you designate. Also, on your bank accounts, checking and savings, it could be in your name only, but you should have a POD on the account, which is payable on death. So that way, that in the event of your passing, all that your beneficiary has to do is present a death certificate and identification, and the bank will give them money. There are many, many times when people have only their name on the bank account, they pass away, and the family member tries to go to the bank to get the money, but the bank closes the account. If there's a POD on file, all they have to do is produce their death certificate and the ID, and they will retrieve those funds. Those are just basic things that if you cannot afford a revocable living trust, that you can do to make sure that nothing goes to probate. And also, if you're fortunate enough to have investments like a mutual fund, you need a TO deed. That's called a transfer on death, so that the investment funds, such as your stocks or bonds or mutual funds, will be transferred to the person upon your passing. Then they can make the decision whether they want to keep the investment or whether they want to cash it in.
So in our last few minutes, Tommy, I know that you have helped people do this. There are folks who want to name an organization or a church or a sorority to say, I want them to get some of my money. And I know people have done that with the Organization for Black Struggle. We've signed stuff to say, okay, we know that this person has us in their, I don't know if that's always a will, but a livable trust. What's, if people want, because you talked about, you know, you don't always have to have a family member, but you want to give it to somebody.
Right.
What is the best, most simple way for them to name a church, a organization, a charity of their choice in their living trust?
first, do not put it in a will, because the will has got to be probated. And that also means that the will can be contested. It can be contested by the family members that felt that they should not have given anything to an organization, and it can be held up in court for years. Beneficiary, if you have a life insurance policy and you want to leave a portion, or if you will, the entire benefit to the organization, name the organization as the beneficiary. The same for your investments. You can even, I've had people to tell me, I don't have any relatives, I don't want to leave my home to any one particular person, I want to leave it to an organization.
We're not going to leave it to Junebug, right?
Don't leave it to Junebug. But you can actually have that plan set up whereby the house can go to the organization. Beneficiary is the key. It's very inexpensive, and everyone can do that. It doesn't require a lawyer to do it. Just go to the financial institution or to the insurance company and tell them you want to be the beneficiary. Now, what you'll need for an organization, you'll need to have their tax ID number. But that organization already has it, especially if they're a not-for-profit 501c3. And even if they're not a 501c3, they have a tax ID number. So it's relatively easy to do that. But do not leave charitable contributions in a will, because wills have to be probated.
Good advice, you all. Good advice. Thank you, Tommy. I'm just thinking while you're talking, this actually needs to be a workshop that people can come to. And I know you're pretty good about not using technical and legal terms so that it's really understandable. But still, like, people, I could just see people glazing over. Because already I still am using will and trust interchangeably when you already told me that they're not the same thing. Yeah, so I know for the average person, you know, all this stuff sounds like gobbledygook, but we got to figure out how to understand it for our own families and for our own lives. And so that's what I've been constantly trying to do, to see what makes sense. And now in 2024, what is the law saying I can or cannot do? So we appreciate you coming by and sharing your expertise, sharing your passion for our community to be all getting straight A's in financial literacy.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. It was a pleasure indeed. Look forward to doing it another time.
So we're going to probably have you come back, or at least do something in the community where people can come and bring their little list of questions and they can ask you that. Because we remember we talked a little bit about the way that we had done for the Organization for Black Struggle. We did the attorney thing, and we always talked about, well, we need something for the financial literacy, and we just never did pull it off. But it just seems like now with all of the misinformation that's out there, that we really need to try to do that at least once quarterly or something. But again, you know, thank you for all that you do for our community. I personally thank you for all you've done for me and for the organizations that you have helped us, you know, get insurance, you know, do different things. It's not easy if you don't have somebody that you have confidence in. Not trust, y'all. Confidence. So we have confidence in Tommy Mines. And the number to reach him if you want to follow up is 314-296-6142. And he'll be very attentive. So we know that yesterday the state still executed Brian Dorsey in spite of all the requests and demands not to. But we are going to continue to work around, you know, abolition of the death penalty. And so don't think that was a defeat. It is a defeat for Brian and his family, but certainly the struggle for abolition of the death penalty will continue. We also are going to have lobby day next Thursday. Action St. Louis has got a free bus. They're going to do training. They got lunch for you. Because we are under attack, y'all, here in St. Louis. Those folks up in Jeff City intend for us to be a plantation, and we are saying no. We're not going to run off the plantation. We're going to stay here, and we are going to fight for what we is ours, and fight for local control of the police department. So if you are interested in that, I think I have it on my website, but that's the 18th, next Thursday. They're going to leave at 9 o'clock over at Deaconess parking lot, Deaconess Foundation, over there on Vander Manor. Again, free. You're going to get training because you need to know how to do this right. And they're going to have lunch and they're going to bring you back safe. So that is something that put on your calendar. Tomorrow, speaking of local control of the police, the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression are having their monthly meeting, and they're going to be talking about the police budget, and where we need to start looking at, to redirect some of those funds for, you know, services for real people, services to develop our community. And their, component of that meeting is going to be a political education, series on abolition. Also coming up is, there's going to be some films over there at the Black Griot. And, you need to get over there. That's going to be at Black Griot, 2505 St. Louis Avenue. And in a couple of weeks, there's going to be a fundraiser for Cori Bush that folks have notified me about. So there is a lot going on, you all. If you missed any of this, go to my website at JamalaRogers.com. And also, if you missed any of the past, any of the past shows, you can also check those out. So yeah, it's just, you know, this is a good time to be in St. Louis. It's a good time to be alive because there are opportunities for us to be involved, and I'm gonna make sure you know what those are. I am trying to find my outro music. And I don't see it. Oh, there it is. Well, why isn't it coming on? Okay, y'all. We might have to miss the music today. Thank you for listening. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.